I first want to thank Roger and Nathan for inviting me to this interesting conference. Yesterday, the first day of the conference, we had nice introductions to machine learning by Ashish and Maria and others. And I'm not a machine learner, but I want to add one slide to those introductions, and that's actually something which I learned from my friend Ali Ghazzi, who is, by the way, from University of Waterloo. He's a professor in machine learning at University of Waterloo. And he said the machine learning techniques differ in, have three components and differ based on these three components. They have a model, and they have an optimization technique, and they have search technique. And every different machine learning is different based on this. For example, if you have a Boltzmann machine, your model is Boltzmann distribution of some graph with some hidden and visible variables. Your optimization, you're optimizing log likelihood with some techniques like gradient descent or some other techniques. And your search algorithm is usually contrastive divergence, or PCD, or some other search algorithm. So that's how this you can distinguish this. And it is interesting and important to, when you introduce quantum mechanics into your machine learning technique, it is important to understand to which one of these boxes you're introducing your quantum device. And most of the machine learning, quantum machine learning techniques I know of, they introduce quantum mechanics into the search part. So you have a quantum algorithm that can do the search faster. But the rest of the algorithm, the model and the optimization, are classical. So what I'm going to introduce today is something totally different. So we introduce quantum mechanics in all three aspects. We basically change all three aspects. So we have a quantum distribution that is our model. We have a quantum hardware that does the search. And because of quantum mechanics, we had to adjust the optimization. So it's all three aspects are affected by quantum mechanics in the talk I'm giving right now. So I think for this audience, I don't need to talk more about quantum, about machine learning. I have a few slides for other talks. I can just go over them very quickly. So in machine learning, as I mentioned, you have a model that describes a distribution of some data, and then you by training the model, you can introduce parameters. And once your model trained, then you're hoping that your model can tell you something about an unseen data. For example, can you guess what this is? This digit is? This is MNIST. Can you guess? Five? It's actually three. So it's, even for humans, it's difficult to distinguish some of these digits. And you can see just by this corner, five doesn't have this corner. This is three. So now, in probabilistic models, which is the model we use for Boltzmann machines, we think of data as a distribution. And your model should produce a distribution that matches the distribution of data. So you're hoping that your model has some parameters, which is generally we represent by theta. And you're hoping you can actually tune theta in such a way that your distribution of your model agrees with the distribution of data. And if your model is a Boltzmann, if the distribution of your model is Boltzmann, then you have a Boltzmann machine. That's the definition of Boltzmann machine. Okay, now what is Boltzmann? Usually in Boltzmann machine, people use Ising model, and you have variables, bias, and weights, which you can tune, and these are our parameter theta. And you can also introduce hidden variables that you guys know. I don't need to discuss them. Then you have to define marginalized distribution by marginalizing or summing over hidden variables. And then to train you optimize log likelihood and or minimize negative log likelihood, and like gradient descent is a way to do that. And the whole value of the technique comes from how efficiently you can calculate the gradient. And what Boltzmann machine gives you is a way to estimate the gradient using sampling. So if you, for example, if you write this negative log likelihood and take a derivative, you will find that the derivative is given by two expectation values of the derivative of the energy. And these expectation values correspond to clamped average and unclamped average. So the clamped average means you clamp the visible units to the data, like these are like zeros and ones, and because we are talking about spins, I represent it by up and down, but it really is zeros and ones. And unclamped means just your model, your Boltzmann distribution without clamping. I use the word clamping and unclamping deliberately because some people call model and data, you will find out later. Okay, now if I introduce my definition of the energy, I will find that the steps that I have to take to in the gradient descent in these two parameters are given by averages of bias or magnetization and correlations. Okay. Now, so far it's just classical, and the main question is, can we do the same using quantum distortion? And the reason this question came to me was, we have a very good machine learning group at D-Wave, and they were frustrated by the fact that D-Wave doesn't give them classical Boltzmann distribution. And they kept complaining, this is not classical Boltzmann distribution. And my answer was, it's not supposed to be. This is a quantum machine. And then I asked them, so what do you need? And they said, we need some characterizable distribution. And then I thought, okay, so what if this is just a Boltzmann distribution of a quantum Hamiltonian, not collided? Can we use that? And they didn't know quantum mechanics, they couldn't answer. Then I had to do it myself. So that's the history of how this thing began. And so by quantum, I mean turning the Ising Hamiltonian to transverse Ising Hamiltonian, and so I think for most of this audience, they understand what transverse Ising Hamiltonian is, but you introduce, so this is the Ising Hamiltonian, but I change these variables plus minus one to Pauli matrices in Z direction, and then I introduce some extra variables which represent transverse field. And now, the first step is to define marginalized distribution. And so you can define the marginalized distribution by introducing some projection operator. So marginalized means I want to fix visible variables and sum over hidden variables. So what you would do, you would introduce a projection operator that fixes the visible variables, and then you trace, and this trace, because the visible variables are fixed, this trace will act on the hidden variables. We deliberately write it this way, and you will find out why this is useful. And this rho is a density matrix, which if your system is in equilibrium, your density matrix look like this equilibrium density matrix. And we use beta equals to 1, which means all the energy scales are normalized to temperature. But when we want to use the hardware, we have to introduce temperature properly, and I will tell you how. Okay, now I want to train this I call quantum boson machine because now I'm introducing quantum distribution, not a classical distribution. So how do I train this? So I do again the same. I write this negative log likelihood, and my probability is now defined this way, which I introduced before. And now if I take derivative of this thing, and if I know the world is classical, which means these two matrices or Hamiltonians or do commute, then I would get the derivative of e to the h is actually e to the minus h, a derivative of h, and I will get exactly what I got classically. So no surprise, so quantum mechanics in the limit of classical should give a classical result. However, if these two operators do not commute, which in the case of quantum Hamiltonian, a transverse Ising model, they do not commute, then we find that this identity doesn't hold anymore, and therefore the gradient is not given by this expectation value, and now I'm in trouble because I told you the whole advantage of boson machine is it gives you a way to calculate gradient using sampling. Now I cannot use sampling to calculate gradient, and if I calculate gradient exactly, it is exponentially fast, very hard, and I cannot do that. So then my whole idea of boson machine becomes useless. So then we introduced two properties into boson, into this training. And these are properties coming from traces. One of them is like the derivative, although the derivative of e to the minus h is not equal to derivative of e to the minus h times derivative of h, but if I introduce trace, the equality holds. So this is okay. And the other the property was Goldman-Thompson inequality, which is for Hermitian matrices, A and B, e to the A, e to the B is bigger than trace of e to the A plus e to the A plus B. And then if you do that, you will find that actually everything works. You can introduce a bound for the probability. So instead of writing the probability, you can introduce bound for the probability. And the bound for the probability depends on the Hamiltonian, and you introduce Hamiltonian, which is h minus log of this projection operator. And it turns out that this Hamiltonian is exactly the clamped Hamiltonian, because whenever you have something that is not the variable v that you want to project onto, this Hamiltonian gives you infinite penalty. So then it has to be a projection operator. And then it turns out that you can actually train not the actual log likelihood, but the a bound on the log likelihood, and the derivative becomes again expressible in terms of terms that we can calculate using sampling. Okay, so now we try to actually do this numerically, and this work is done in collaboration with our session chair, Bowden and Roger Melko. And it is actually now on this archive. You can look at it. So what we did in this collaboration, we introduced some distribution, and we tried to train using this distribution, and we found something interesting, which is if you measure KL divergence, so the system we considered is a fully connected. So I will give you another example later. So this is just to give you the flavor of what we obtained. This is a fully visible problem, and it is convex. So the minimum that you find for log likelihood is the absolute minimum. There's no local minimum. And we found that when we do training using iteration or epoch, the classical saturate at some point, which is this is the minimum attainable by classical, and when we do the quantum mechanical with exact gradient, it goes actually below what is attainable classically. And when we do the bound gradient, which we optimize the bound, we again go below the classical attainable limit. And so this is what we got. And then the next step was, can we use D-wave to do this? And that was so what I'm going to show you is some very new, fresh results, which actually came like in 1-2 weeks ago. And so it's very preliminary result. But so before I get to these results, I want to introduce to you what D-wave machine does. So D-wave Hamiltonian is basically a transverse Isaac Hamiltonian. That's why it's useful for this quantum boson machine. And there are two parameters which multiply the transverse field and the diagonal part or part of the Hamiltonian, A and B. And these parameters change as a function of time. So zero time, you are here, and the finite time, the final time, you are here at S equals to 1. Therefore, this parameter S, which we call annealing parameter, changes from 0 to 1 during the finite annealing time, which set it to be 20 microseconds. Now, usually people think of this system as adiabatic quantum computer, and the picture we get from adiabatic quantum computer from the papers published by S. Farhi and others is that you start from the ground state of the initial Hamiltonian, and you evolve the system gradually, and if the evolution is slow, you will get to the ground state of the final Hamiltonian, which is the solution that you want. And how slow you have to go is depends on how small the gap is, so it's inversely proportional to gap squared. But what I'm going to tell you, this is not what happens in reality in these machines. What happens in reality is these are open quantum systems. And you have to introduce temperature into the picture. And what temperature does is actually thermalizes the system, the excited system up and down. So you get excitations and relaxation, and as you anneal, which means you drag S from 0 to 1, you see that the system thermalizes and occupies other state. And that's why it's useful for a quantum boson machine. But as you see, I show these arrows with certain height, which represent temperature for me in energy scale. But you see that the width of the arrows becomes narrower and narrower. And the reason, the width represents the rate of transition. As you go towards the end of evolution, the rate of transition becomes smaller, and finally exponentially small. And what happens is your dynamics freeze at some point because there is no transition practically after that particular point. So this is a numerical calculation of what's going to happen. I use the standard Redfield model with the Hamiltonian of the hardware and the noise that we characterize based on our hardware. And these are the eigenstates of the Hamiltonian. And this is the probability distribution as a function of S, which again, S is the normalized time. And you see, up to some point, so these solid lines are equilibrium distribution, quantum distribution, equilibrium quantum distribution. And you see that the circles are the outcome of the simulation, open quantum simulation. And you see the open quantum model predicts that the system follows equilibrium very closely up to some point and it starts deviating. And after another point, it freezes. And I call this yellow region, freezing region. Yeah?
So you have a time scale for adiabatic quantum computing. In this case, what you're thermalizing during the evolution, is there still a speed limit on the system, and how can I think about that? Or can you just evolve very quickly?
If you evolve very quickly, then you also transition non-adiabatically. Yeah, so but this gap is so big that is very fast. That's like...
So you don't have a speed limit?
You have a speed limit, but it is far beyond the reach of the hardware for this problem. The gap is very big. So now... So what happens is now, if you look at the distribution at the... So we do the measurement at the end of the evolution. That's how the hardware works. At the end, you measure, and at the end, you don't have any transverse field. So you're actually basically measuring when the Hamiltonian is classical. But what happens is because of this freezing phenomenon, the probability that we measure is the probability, some probability in this freezing region. And if this freezing region is narrow, you can actually distinguish one point that the final distribution is the same as the Boltzmann distribution at this particular point. And this is the point I'm drawing here. So the final distribution is approximately close to the quantum Boltzmann distribution at this point. But if you now look at what this point corresponds to in the spectrum of the Hamiltonian, you see that actually there is not much difference between classical energies and quantum energies at these points. So the distribution that I will find for this particular problem is basically classical Boltzmann distribution for this particular problem. And if I want to have a quantum Boltzmann distribution, I have to reach regions here, which is beyond this freezing region, and it is difficult. So I will get back to this point later. So now, the question was now I want to try to do this on the hardware. The problem we considered here is very similar to the problem we considered in the paper with Bowden and Roger. This is a 8 logical bits in fully connected graph. This is logical graph. But now on the hardware, every logical bit is correspond to 4 physical qubits. So every color, like red, is now 4 physical qubits on the hardware graph. And therefore, this 8 qubits logical system corresponds to 32 qubit physical system. And we run this on a chip that has 2,000 qubits on it. So we only focus on 4 unit cells in this 2,000 qubit chip. Now, what happens now, because the Hamiltonian that I showed you before is the Hamiltonian for the physical qubits. Now, I want to sample from logical qubit in order to train. So now I need to introduce a Hamiltonian for the logical qubits. And that Hamiltonian depends on the freeze-out. So where because we assume the sampling happens at the freeze-out. And so because for every physical qubit, logical qubit, I have 4 physical qubits, then for each bias, I have 4 H's, which is 4 logical H's. And in this particular graph, every 2 logical qubits are coupled by 2 physical couplers. Therefore, I get a factor of 2, and everything is normalized to temperature. And for transverse field, now, transverse field is equivalent to tunneling. So for transverse field, now we have to consider the tunneling of a logical variable, not the tunneling of physical variable. So we have to introduce tunneling of logical variable, and that is the effective tunneling amplitude of a chain. And this can be calculated using diagonalization. So we diagonalize based on the Hamiltonian, we diagonalize and calculate this effective tunneling. And this is the dimensionless parameter gamma in our training Hamiltonian. OK, now, so what we want to do to train this quantum Boltzmann machine using D-Wave, and a student of mine, Amir Hoshaman, did that. He is an intern now at DVA. And the distribution he introduced was a four Gaussian peaks in the state number. So this is like a state number that we call 0000 as 0 and 11111 as 256, because we have 8 qubit 256 logical states. And he introduced four peaks. By the way, Bodon also introduced something similar. So it wasn't his invention. Bodon did also something similar before. So he introduced four peaks. And this is the training with normal annealing that we do. And again, as before, we realized that the quantum Hamiltonian with constant transverse field, which is 3.46, which I will tell you why this number, actually trains better than classical. This is the blue line is classical, the best attainable classically way using a standard Boson machine. And the quantum Boson machine can have smaller KL divergence. But when we use hardware, actually hardware agrees with classical. And what it tells me is what I showed you before. The freezing point, when I anneal normally, the freezing point happens when the distribution is classical. Now, so what shall we do? We want to reach a point that the distribution is quantum. Now, I told you that the Hamiltonian of the hardware has this annealing parameter S, which we normally in the annealing, we linearly change it as a function of time. But we can do something else. So if we could linearly change it up to some S star and then jump to the end of the annealing, then we would have projective readout. And that's what we want. But that's not possible because of filtering, because our lines are filtered, and if you do that, the filter does not allow this sudden change, and eventually you get something smooth. What we can do in practice is actually annealing faster, as fast as our filtering allows, although it goes beyond the level that we can control these lines, but it doesn't matter as long as they just go fast, even they are not synchronized. So we can ramp this up, so we call it annealing with ramp. We ramp this parameter up to the end with some ramping rate which is smaller than 1 microsecond. And that's what we can do. So can we do this and do the training? By the way, this kind of annealing with ramp, we did it before in this Nature Communication paper. And it was used for sampling, but can we do this kind of trick for training? And we actually tried that, and the thing became worse. So this is, again, quantum Boson machine, classical Boson machine. This is D-wave with ramp. And the reason it became worse is because when you do the ramping, the system still has evolution. And this evolution actually screws up the distribution. But as long as this evolution is local, which means like only during this ramp time, only 1 qubit, 2 qubits will move, and we don't have very global change of distribution, this can be corrected by quantum Monte Carlo. So the next step we did was actually to try to correct any error caused by this ramping by quantum Monte Carlo. And what we hope is quantum Monte Carlo just does post-processing, not processing for you. So this is an evidence of that. So this is a number of sweeps of quantum Monte Carlo. And if you start from the hardware, you get there's a KL divergence between the distribution you get from the hardware with the exact quantum distribution at the point that we ramp. And we ramp at this particular point. That's the best point we could get, a good distribution. That's why we chose this number. And we see that the KL divergence is actually very bad without ramping. That means the The ramp distribution does not correspond to the correct quantum Boltzmann distribution. But with even two sweeps of quantum Monte Carlo, we get to like 5% error. So this tells me that our hypothesis that the ramp causes local disturbance is correct. And with seven sweeps of quantum Monte Carlo, we reach something like 1% error distance. But if you do the same quantum Monte Carlo with random start points, you see that you need like almost 50 sweeps to reach to the same quality that you reached with the hardware. So this tells us the hardware do something in the direction that we want. It gives you samples from a the correct distribution, but locally disturbed by ramping. Okay, now if we try to train with this distribution, which is here, with seven sweeps of quantum Monte Carlo, then this is what we get. Again, this is the quantum, which is below classical for this particular problem. This is classical Boltzmann, quantum Boltzmann. And this line, which is this kind of these weird jumps, is the hardware with ramp and post-processing. And it actually got below classical and pretty close to the ideal quantum Hamiltonian. And just to test that, it's not the post-processing that do the job for us. It's actually the hardware do the hard job. We actually trained with post-processing. This is a trained with post-processing in a persistent. So we have this PCD, persistent contrasted divergence. So we do something similar with quantum Monte Carlo. We run quantum Monte Carlo seven steps, which is the post-processing. And then we train. And then again, we do seven steps and with the same, starting from the same state that we obtained before. And we call it like PQMC. And we see that with this kind of algorithm, which just does the quantum Monte Carlo, not the hardware, we cannot attain what the hardware attains. And that brings me to my conclusion that a quantum Boltzmann machine can be trained in a very similar fashion as a classical Boltzmann machine. And for some problems, and this is, again, an open question for what kind of problems quantum Boltzmann machine can give you better distribution than classical, better training than classical. But for some problems, we have that it can learn better. And I showed you some preliminary experimental results that a quantum annealer like D-Wave can be used with some tricks to train a quantum Boltzmann machine. Thank you.
Hi, I have actually two questions. You said you have a complete graph with 8 nodes and like 4 qubits per node. And you also said that you have 2,000 qubits on your chip. Mm-hmm. You have to sacrifice nearly all the qubits to have a complete graph?
No, the reason we did that because you cannot do exact diagonalization for 2,000 qubits. So we wanted to do something at a small size so that we know what's going on exactly. We can do this at 2,000 qubits, but you don't know what you get something.
And like, would you also have a complete graph with your 2,000 qubits?
No, if you want to have complete graph, you get something like 60 qubits or something, 660 variables with long chains.
And in a node, you said you have 4 qubits, and are all the qubits equivalent, or do you have a memory qubit, a computation qubit, or a communication qubit?
All qubits are equivalent.
Just for clarification, so on the slide before, in mm-hmm. the last like training method that you mentioned, so what corresponds to these steps? Is that the post-processing or just to, you know, these like discrete steps in the D-Wave and post-processing?
Oh, this one?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Amir use some weird optimization, switching between two optimization methods, one of them based on Hessian and the other one conjugate method. And because of that, he gets this weird step. But if you change optimization, you don't get this.
So you couldn't speed it up by making the pattern shorter?
I asked him to do that. He did. He couldn't get the same result. I don't know why. This is a very preliminary result. I think you can get better care. But the reason for these jumps is because of switching back and forth between these.
So you use four real qubits to represent one logical qubit, right?
Yeah.
So how do you enforce the constraints to achieve that?
We set the coupling between these qubits to the maximum. In this training, we didn't constrain. We just trained and checked whether we get chain breaks, and we don't get any chain breaks in this particular problem. But in more practical problems, you have to actually put some constraints so that the coupling between chains don't go above some number so that you don't get chain breaks. But we don't get any chain breaks in this particular example.
It looks like initially the classic Boltzmann machine learns quicker compared to the exact diagonalization. Do you have an explanation for this?
I think that has to do something with the bound. Because when you introduce this bound, you're not really optimizing the actual log likelihood. You're optimizing something weaker, and that makes it slower. Excuse me.
How does the cost of the post-processing scale with the problem size?
It doesn't scale. I think 7-8, we have tested at larger size. 7-8 is enough to recover. Because what you care is to recover like 1 qubit, 2 qubit operations. And this doesn't scale. So. Boden.
Hello. Yeah, I have a question about this post-processing. So the goal of the post-processing is like obtaining the same statistics at the freezing points in case you were doing a perfectly adiabatic ramping, or it's more like really aiming to optimize the KLD?
No, it's just to correct the error of the ramping. That's all.
Okay. Okay. No,
Can you elaborate on the classical algorithm that you use for this?
That is the training quantum, the classical Boltzmann machine using exact Boltzmann distribution. It's not PCD or anything. Just because it's a small problem, we can calculate exact Boltzmann distribution, and we train based on that. So that's why I'm saying the minimum that you get is the absolute minimum of the log likelihood. There is no local minimum or something. We cannot get below that with classical Boltzmann machine.
Quick question, is the exact diagonalization is based on the 8-qubit graph, or in the 8 logical graph, or in the 32?
In the logical.
In the logical graph.
Yeah.
So how do you handle the distortion of the, I mean, going back to the question of Juan, like when you go from the embedding to the embedding stage, where you set the ferromagnetic couplers and you set it, let's say, to a maximum value, it seems like, I mean, the two Boltzmann distributions are going to be somehow in mismatch, distorted, because now you have a Boltzmann. You can imagine that with these parameters, if you put it too high, then effectively you're lowering the temperature because you're putting the other parameters close to zero. And if you put it too low, then in principle, you're not enforcing the constraint. So how do you manage to find the sweet spot in the parameters this distortion of this
so
between the Boltzmann distribution?
When I write this effective Hamiltonian, it takes into account everything.
It takes into account the physical,
yeah.
So, okay,
yeah.
Okay, that's, yeah, so, okay.
And the fact that we don't see any chain breaks, that suggests that this is okay.
Okay. So the energy and everything is in the physical Hamiltonian
yeah.
state. Okay,
yeah.
That's good. Okay.
I guess there are no more questions. Thank you, Mohamed.